Hey everybody, welcome to episode 203 of the Board Game Barbecue podcast. I'm Sarah, and this episode I'm joined by two people sharing earphones. It's Jules and Adrian, and they're both at Adrian's house. Hey guys, how you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you, Sarah?
I'm good. I'm like waving my arms around because I know you guys can't do that. I have all the space. And you guys weird. Are all clumped together.
I feel like I have the right earphone in and Jules has the left earphone in, and I feel like Lady and the Tramp, like we're going to share the spaghetti and get closer and closer by the end of the episode. Who knows what will happen?
It reminds me of like being on the bus or something, you know, being on the school bus and sharing headphones with your friend or something. Yeah. It's pretty cute. Anyway.
This is the quality of the board game barbecue.
Well, sometimes you have to improvise, right? So
that's it.
It's really cool that you were in Brisbane and you're able to join Jules. And you guys obviously
I haven't been on the pod for ages.
Yeah, because you've been on holiday. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've just been cruising up the east coast of Australia for it's coming up on a month now. Just exploring places all up the coast and just having a good time. Going to the beaches, having good food, catching up with people, including Adrian. It's just been awesome. I'm loving it.
You're lucky, Doc. So jealous. Like in Discord, you've just been like, oh, here's a photo of some new place I've been to. Here's Harvey Bay. Here's all these beaches and stuff.
Yes, all the beaches.
Very jealous. And you guys have, like, obviously you've had an opportunity to play some stuff together while you've been there. So
Come on,
spill the beans. Well, what have you guys been playing?
We moved house and we haven't kind of christened the game room at all. Mm-hmm. Like me and MJ have played a little bit of Res Arcana and stuff. And we had our KDM game this week, which was on Wednesday, but nothing else other than that. So we got to play a heap of different games. And, yeah, it was great. Like, had a great time. Played lots of games that I haven't played before, which was always nice. And then got to play some games that we've already kind of played and sizzled, and ones that, you know, I wanted to show Jules specifically, including the Pipeline expansion, which was really fun. Like, we played that this morning at like 8:30.
Oh my gosh, that's so early to play Pipeline. It was such a brain burner.
It was really good.
Man, it was such a tight game as well.
Was it just the two of you?
296. Yeah, just the two of us. Mm-hmm. 296 to 334 at the end, but the evaluations were like crazy. Like they were really weird, and it made you really have to think about what you were doing. And you were trying to be efficient but make money, but the valuations kind of hindered that, and they didn't really align with just trying to get as big as pipes as you could and make as much money as possible.
What are the valuations really again? Is that something from the expansion?
Kind of like end game scoring.
Yeah, no, it's in the base game. It's just end game scoring, but just the combination we had was funky, and we actually ended up having the same amount of cash left over at the end of the game. Exact same.
Yeah. We both had, is it
$34?
$34 each, but it was all in the valuations and the oil and stuff that we've done. But it was good. What do you think of the expansion? What do you think?
I can see it makes the game infinitely replayable and is absolutely something that is you don't necessarily have to be a hardcore fan of Pipeline, but if you've played it a lot, it is absolutely something you get to keep that longevity going. And, you could play that game forever because it will never be the same. The puzzles just change so much. Even just the slightest repositioning of a market or an evaluation can totally change the puzzle.
Yeah.
I was about to say the markets move around. Ryan coming on the show, the markets moved around.
It's literally you get all the components of Pipeline, you put them in a blender, and you just pour it out on the board, and then that's what the expansion
sounds
does.
Messy. What were you saying, Adrian?
It sparked quite a kind of cool conversation as well at the end, because we often say like, a sign of a good expansion is one that you would play, you know, with the game forever, or you teach it with the game and stuff like that. But with this, it's a fantastic expansion. Probably one of the best expansions personally for me I've ever played, because it's one of my favorite games of all time. But I would never teach that like that. I would always just teach the base game and then add this as a thing for someone who's played it multiple times.
And that's not because of the complexity. That's just because of like the chaos of it, or
Yeah, I mean, it makes it more complex because nothing links, nothing matches. There's no synchronicity between the things. So in Refined Market 1, 2, and 3, you know that you've got Refined is 1 is orange, then you've got Refined 2 is blue, then Refined 3 is gray, for instance. I think it's the order. But in this, they're all jumbled up, completely jumbled up. So nothing makes any sense. There's nothing that you can look at a path to something and go, okay, well, that makes sense. I'm going to go here and sell some gray, but I'll buy some orange because you might go there to sell some gray and there's no gray things there. In fact, there's no orange there either. You can't even buy any orange because there's only one place to buy orange in the whole game. It really makes that puzzle just completely
different. Yeah, what ended up happening, I think, that I noticed, or we both noticed at the start of the game was there was a lot of blue and gray markets, but all the government tiles were heavily weighted in orange pipes.
Yes.
We're like, okay.
And for anyone that's played the game before, like we played it with the one where each year the amount you need to refine goes up.
It increases, yes.
So like some of them were on eights. Like you had to have an eight long pipe to get it to that next level because it was a seven. But then
it increased
the next year and went up to eight. So it was like I'd stuck myself in the first year because I needed 12 to refine my oil to a medium grade. But by the time the next year went round, I needed 13 and I'd blocked the pipe off and couldn't make a 13.
It was
really interesting. It was great. Really enjoyed it.
So what happens if you couldn't make a 13? Like you can't. You're stuck with oil, or you're stuck.
Well, you can only you can refine to a low grade. Then you have to take a separate action to refine to a medium grade.
Yeah.
But
luckily
for me, I'd bought the upgrade, which was the pipe specialization type, and I'd bought the blue type and the medium grade, which meant there was a reduction in the need for refining that particular oil. So that got me back over the marker again for another year.
Nice, but
only just. So it was really good. It was great.
And I assume there's a lot more of those tech cards and things as
well. Yeah, there's more.
I think there's four. There's four different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of them's really cool. It's you can buy any tech from a previous year or whatever you want, you know, when it's level one. But you can also, I think by the time you get that to level three, you can buy stuff that's not even in the game. The level three of that tech one is buy any tech that's even if it's not in the game.
In the box?
Really?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm going to double check and get
back
to you on that,
but I'm pretty sure. Do whatever you want.
It just opens up the floodgates.
That's cool.
So, yeah. But that was a pipeline at 8:30 this morning, which is grand.
8:30. And then you stop for lunch.
Pretty much.
I'll give the laundry list of what we've played over Saturday and Sunday. So we kicked it off with Ankh, and we've done Trailblazers, High Society, So Clover, Vindication, Pipeline, and Escape Plan.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
A few long games in there as well.
Yeah, it was good. Vindication's always good though. Like that was a tight race. That was amazing actually because Jules like went really far ahead at the start, like guns blazing, like miles ahead of everyone. But then I could see your steam started to slow down.
I really lost steam.
And it was really.
I was actually last at the start. You guys stormed ahead, and then I got a relic which was worth 6 points. And then I put three cubes on it, and every time I pulled off the cube, I get 3 points.
Yeah.
So that was like. 15 point swing, and I had another turn which was an 11 point swing, so I really rocketed ahead, but I lost my steam and just didn't get there.
MJ just caught you up at the end and managed to take the win with the monsters. It was really good, and it was not much in it. It was like 4 points.
Yeah, it was very close.
It was really close.
What's the end game condition of Vindication?
So you have a whole deck of end game conditions,
right?
And you start with three, and as people go progressing on the score track, there are little coins. When someone collects that, you flip out a new one. So you can end up with like six or seven,
endgame
conditions, and only one of them being met will trigger the end of the game.
Yeah, that's so, right. I remembered it was wacky.
It's
which
so
is cool.
Different.
Yeah.
So you can get long games, you can get games that are very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that when Finn did his thing to Matt? With his cheeky comedy line. So we taught Matt the game. Matt hadn't played before, and we'd all played the game me, MJ, and Jules had played before, and it was Matt's first game, and
right.
he did great, like way better than I did, miles ahead of me. Mm-hmm. But Matt's sort of thinking his move. You know when you think out loud and you're like, I'm going to – and you kind of hold that pause. Finn just sitting in the corner of the room playing Oyo goes – do nothing. and then we're all laughing and winding Matt up about it. And then Finn just quietly to himself just goes, zing. He just got that.
He had a great zinger.
Zinging it. It was perfect. It was great timing. It just made it even more funny. So, yeah.
Is Matt like a, does he get AP? Because that's like the classic line.
No, not at all.
Oh, he doesn't. Okay. Because if like, he was a big AP and you're like, you're going to do nothing, that would just be.
That would be awkward. No, it wasn't like that at all. It was just, you know what it's like when you're thinking out loud. And we actually said this morning that I think Pipeline is one of the most games where you talk to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jules is just sitting there telling me his entire move from start to finish. And it's like a 3-minute long move. And then I'm doing it back. I'm not even talking to Jules. I'm talking to myself just to make sure that what I'm doing is correct in the right order and I'm making it right. And it's really funny. There's no conversation. It's like, okay, I'm going to go to
record a game of that happening. It would be
buying
funny
two
as.
Blue cubes. I'm going here. I'm going to upgrade. Then I'm going to pay $10 to go there. Grab this, buy some more oil. Then I'm going to run my machine, and that fills this contract. And I'm just saying it all out loud. And I'm like, oh crap, I can't do any of that stuff. I haven't got enough money to run my machine. Okay, give me a second. I've got to think about it again. And it goes back again. But it's a funny, strange game.
I think I do that in every game, and I've only just realized just now.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
We definitely all do it.
And sometimes you are saying it because you want. You're not sure if you are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, if someone might pick up on the fact that I'm accidentally cheating, and then they'll tell me and they'll know because I'm saying everything. You can't cheat if you're saying what you're doing, and then it's on you if you didn't pick it up.
If you didn't pick it up and I won, it's not my fault. Yeah. Like, that's your fault.
That's right.
Yeah, that was really good. It was a great couple of days. And I played like a bunch of games I hadn't played before, which was really always nice, like playing some games you haven't played before. So,
yeah. I didn't play much this week, so I'll just jump in because it's going to be super quick to talk about what I've been playing. Because you can probably hear in my voice, I'm a little bit sick. So I just played Illusion and Love Letter with my son, but it was his idea. Nice. And so I take that as a win.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's his idea and stuff. Sure. So he actually took Illusion. Like, he took it back to his dad's house to play with his dad, which was, I thought, really cool. I was like, oh my gosh, he really likes this game. He's even
Illusion is awesome.
Yeah.
It is awesome. It's so good. It's just, like, do you guys do the thing, though, where you, I feel like it's a bit of a cheat, but if there's, like, 6 cards in the line, like, I'm going to call it. I don't care if it's.
It gets to a point where you're like, surely something's wrong.
Yeah, something's going to be wrong.
Yeah,
but it doesn't always work. I've had it backfire where there's two that are identical, which is fine.
True. Usually it works. Usually it's
well, usually.
That's definitely Finn's tactic because whenever we're playing it, it's gone around a bit and it's coming, you know, to like 6 or maybe even 7 cards and he's like, I don't care. I'm calling it. I'm telling everyone now, if you don't call it, I'm calling it, Dad. I'm going to call it. And then he calls it. And, most of the time he's right. Yeah. So it's like a 50-50. But, some of the games are just, when you look at the cards and it's like 8%, 9%, 9%, you're like, how is that 9 and 9?
I love the moments where someone's like, I think it goes in here. And you get like 8%. 20%, 43, 18. Yeah. You're like, what?
So different. That happened tonight. There was one that was like, it was green and there was like a green background, but there was a lot of like triangles on this green background. And so it looked like the green background was so thin, you know? And then the next one had these big cylinders of green.
Circle.
And I'm like, that one, the cylinder one has way more green. And then when, I can't remember, I think Zoltan called it and we're flipping them over and it was like that. It was like the one with the background was 40 something and the cylinder one was only 21 or 23 or something. And I'm like, what? That doesn't make sense to my eyes.
Yeah.
But that's the point, right? So
that's it.
But I do have another game that I really want to talk to you guys about because I think this is a game, I'm like recommending it to everyone because I think it's a game that everyone will like. It's a trick-taking game. It's called Scout, and you can get it in Australia now. It's been produced by Oink Games. That's actually not the version I have. I got like the Japanese version by One More Game. But anyway, you can get it. It's readily available. It's really cool. It's fun because like I don't see myself as a particularly great trick-taking. I'm being really generous on myself too. I think I'm a terrible trick-taking game player, right? Don't partner with me in Tissue.
Yeah.
But this one, I feel it's like a nice trick-taking game. So if you're at all like a little bit, you know, like you can't count cards or you feel like it's too intense. Like some people play The Crew and it's just too intense for them because it's like cooperative and you have to be good at it. Otherwise people are going to be like, why did you play that? This one is like,
you're really not a good teammate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, okay. So how do you play? You have, I think you start with 7 or 8 cards in your hand and the cards are actually, you can flip them upside down and there'll be a different number, right? So at the start, when you get your hand of cards, you can choose which way you want your cards to face. So you can flip your whole hand, how they're given to you though. You're not allowed to move them. You're not allowed to move your cards. That's the cool part about the game, right?
Oh. So you kind of flip 2 or 3. You've got to flip the whole thing.
Yeah, and you've got to keep them where they're at. You can't move them around. And the reason for that is because you're going to be playing, when you play to the middle, you might not just play one card. You might play, it's kind of like poker hands. You might play like a flush or a pair or whatever.
Right.
And you have to play them. The cards have to be next to each other in your hand to play multiple.
Oh.
Like you can't go, oh, I've got a 7 over here and a 7 on the other side of my hand. I'm going to play 2 7s. No. The 2 7s have to be next to each other if you want to play 2 7s, right? So what ends up happening is, and you can have a terrible hand that has nothing going on, right? It's just a total random jumble of numbers and there's no pairs next to each other and there's no straight flushes or anything like that. And what actually ends up happening is you can scout. Instead of playing, you can scout. And what that means is you take one of the cards that's on the table. Let's say Adrian plays 3 9s and I cannot beat that because I don't have 3 of 10, 3 10s because it actually goes up to 10. I don't have 3 10s to beat it or anything like or 4 of a flush. So what I can do is I can scout. Adrian gets a point. So there's these little scout tokens. Adrian will get a point from that and I will take one of those 9s, but I can also look at what number is on the other side of that, right? So if I had if you played a 9 to the middle that had a 10 on the other side and I had 2 10s in my hand or whatever, then I could take that one and put it in my hand. You can put it in your hand wherever you want when you scout and you can put it whichever side you want. So you're allowed to flip that and you can put it wherever you want. So you can't move cards that are in your hand already, but when you scout, you can take one, you can put it in wherever. So you can start to try and get
– build those combos.
Build those combos, yeah. And it's really cool. And so when you the other thing is when you do win, like if I had beat Adrian's 3 9s with 3 10s or 4 10s or whatever, that's also points. So you take the – I would take Adrian's 3 cards and I'd put them in my points pile. And so all the little coins that you've got from scouting, from people scouting cards that you put there, you get as points. And the cards, like the tricks that you've won are also points. And there's an element of trying to end the round when you've got the most points because you can end the round by getting rid of all your cards. So someone gets rid of all their cards, that ends the round. Yeah, but because you can sort of take too long to like – keep building your hand that you can end up having like a lot of cards in your hand and then you know that you have no control, right? You don't have any control of the round ending, but you might still win a bunch of points because you potentially have a really good hand. So that's really interesting. And then you basically play rounds. I think you play rounds until you get to a certain point score or something like that. But yeah, it's super fun. I really like it. It's and there's another thing that you have a token. Yeah, you have a token for every round and it's just like a scout and play and you can use that every round. So you can do both. You can scout a card from the middle and play some cards as well, which you can do a really cool, you know, like I'll take that. And now look at this that I've got. Yeah. I've got like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Like you can have crazy hands in that game. So yeah, it's really fun. I like it a lot.
Nice.
And even if you are not confident at trick taking, I think you'll like it.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds keen to check this one out.
Yeah, it's fun. Like making those combos is fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at what people have put on the table and you're like, oh, can I use this? Can I do that? Oh, and when you scout someone else's card from the middle, you can't, again, you have to work from the outside in. You can't take like a middle card. You have to take the.
Oh.
Yeah. You have to take one of the outside ones, which can be painful because you might be like, oh, that middle one, the middle one's the one I need. Yeah. It's good. I like it. Recommendation from me.
What's the max player count for that?
Oh, it's 5, I think. Yes, 3 to 5 players.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I like those trick taking games with 5. It's good.
Yeah, it's a good amount of players.
Yeah, it's fun.
So,
cool.
What about you guys? Jules, come and tell us about Trailblazers. It's like new and looks great.
It's hot. It's sizzling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so yeah, we were lucky enough to get sent a copy, an advanced copy of Trailblazers, which is Ryan Courtney's new game. It's being published by Bitewing Games. And if you're at all familiar with Pipeline or Curious Cargo, you'll absolutely, you know, start to see the DNA in this game. It is all about building trails. Instead of pipes, it just is trails. It looks very, very similar in the artwork and it's a very simple game. There's not a lot of rules to it, but my gosh, it's one of those games that's like there's so much crunch with like so little rules.
Yeah.
It's very, very grungy. It can definitely be AP inducing because there's just so many options, and I'll explain why. So basically, at the start of the game, you have 3 base camps. You've got kayaking, hiking, and cycling. And you get given a hand of 8 cards, and those cards are like a tall rectangle, and you sort of, the cards are sort of divided in cubes for the sake of overlaying and playing cards. So you put down 1 base camp, and then you have to play 2 cards from your hand, and they have to touch the base camp or another card you've played. And then once everyone's played 2, you pass the hand around, and you draft. It's a drafting thing. So then you play 2 more cards, pass the hands around, play 2 more cards, and then that first round's done. And you do 4 rounds. So you're playing 6 cards every round. So you're playing 24 cards the entire game. That's it. But what you're trying to do is make these paths that loop, that start from, for example, the kayaking base camp, and loop around the map that you can build any direction you want and come back to the base camp. And you'll score points on how long that loop is. But the clever thing is that you can overlay the cards. So if you're building a route out somewhere but you don't like how it's turning out or you want to change direction, you can just whack the cards on top. And just that's obviously in Curious Cargo, which I think you've played, Sarah, right?
Yeah, I played it.
Yeah,
I got it, yeah.
It just that element of being able to put something on top completely changes the puzzle.
So it's many AP more options, for right?
Me. Yeah. I don't have any AP in any games apart from that one.
Yeah, you're not playing in 2D. You're playing in 3D.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just like, and there's no limit to how many times that you can layer those cards. But obviously, the more layering you're doing, you're not getting the trails as far. So there's that push and pull, but it might be that you need to overlay and it's like the exact right thing to complete the trails that you need. So,
and you can fly too close to the sun, right? Like I remember, because I remember playtesting this when it was pipes. And like if you build a really, really long trail and then you don't link it back up, you look like basically wasted a whole bunch of points.
It's a big fat zero points.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely that still exists in the game where you're trying to complete things, but you can't leave it too long because you'll be caught out and have 0 points. Mm. So I think you start to get the cadence and the timing of the game once you've played it a number of times. You go, okay, I feel like at this point I need to start, you know, finishing this off. Otherwise, I may run out of options just based on the cards that come out. But the artwork is gorgeous. I really like it. It's really minimal, but it still reads well on the table. It's just stunning.
I think the production value is phenomenal. They could have done this as like a bunch of chunky pieces of cardboard, yes, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But this is like, you know, like the plastic cards, like in Toonie Bones, mm-hmm, like the plastic that feel like.
Yes.
That's what these things are made out of. So they're completely waterproof. You can even, it even comes in a little Ziploc kind of
clamshell,
hard
the
case.
The bag is cool. Yeah.
And you can take that wherever you want. You just clip it onto a backpack and it's like a proper, like, thought-inducing game in a pack.
Tiny, just, tiny pack.
Yeah.
Like, you literally can put it in your pocket. It comes with a carabiner on it. Yeah, that's right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, this, honestly, this is a game that I will actually take traveling because it's that small, but there's so much game in it. Now, the version that we were sent, the deluxe version, comes with screen printed meeples that add some mini expansions to it to change up the game. Unfortunately, that no longer makes it travel friendly because you have to keep it all in a box because there's a lot of meeples, but they're beautiful. But still, the base game alone for me is like heaps crunchy and really enjoyable. But if you want to up the not so much the complexity, it's up the difficulty, I would say. It's not more complex, it just becomes more difficult. Then you chuck in the animals expansion. And the other one with the people and the camps is actually a totally different mode of play. That's really, you don't play the game the same way. It feels like a totally different puzzle. But I personally really love the base game with the animals expansion. All that does is if there's little animals on the cards, at the moment you play it, you can decide if you want to put the matching meeple on. And if you do, you'll score a bonus 2 points for each unique animal on the completed trail loop.
Okay, cool.
But when you do put the animal on, you can no longer overlay that tile. It's locked in.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So
it's in the way.
So it's like, it creates this extra bit of tension of like, oh, do I really want to lock that in? Or do I like, sometimes it's obvious the decision, but sometimes it's like, yeah, I do that, but that really hinders, you know, how this trail is progressing. And it's such a simple game, but it's just brilliant. I really have enjoyed it. I've played it must be 10 to 15 times now, and I don't see myself getting bored of it because, yes, like, you're trying to do similar things. There's end-game goals and in-game goals that mix things up and give different focuses. You can't really do them all, but just the cards that get presented to you, you're just like, okay, how am I going to do this? Like, there's no like, oh, yeah, I've done this before, you know, here. You can't do that. It doesn't work.
I know what you mean. It's like Curious Cargo is the same with me as well. Like, it's always, you're presented with this, you know, it's almost like a puzzle and you're trying to make it the most efficient pipe thing that you can, and it's always different. It always looks different. You've always created something new, and it's like, how do I get out of this? How do I make this work for me? And yeah, it's quite addictive. I think that kind of puzzle.
Absolutely, that's the perfect word. It is addictive, this game. Like, I've played it back to back multiple times. Because it's a snappy game too. It's just play two cards, pass the hand. Play two, pass the hand. And you sometimes have moments where you go, okay, I really need to think about this. But most of the games are like 20 to 30 minutes max.
We played it with five with a teacher. It was like 40 minutes.
Yeah. 45 minutes. And like, when I play, I really actually enjoy it two player. Now, it has a solo mode that's very difficult, and I really enjoy that. I actually really like it at two player because you're swapping hands.
You know so what's coming
you,
back.
You know you're hoping that person doesn't pick the card and it comes back to your hand.
Yeah.
So you really get this an extra level of tension because when you go to 3+, once you pass it, you know you're never seeing them again.
Yeah, that's why I like Rez with 2.
Yeah.
If you know, okay, I'm going to let you potentially take this on, but if you don't, I'm taking that.
Yes.
It's going to use it. Like, I like drafting with
2. Yeah.
That back and forth is always great.
Yeah. I actually really enjoyed it too, but it's great at 3 and 4. And as Adrian said, we've played it at 5. It goes up to 8.
Oh, wow.
It just has sort of,
it's good.
It has two decks of cards and you just mash them, like one with a dark colored green back, one with a sort of beige back, mm-hmm. and you just add both decks together when you're going more than four players. Mm-hmm. But you could actually break it up differently if you have the game. You can just run two four-player games at the same time. There's enough components for that.
That's really cool.
I call them valuations, but they're not valuations.
Yeah, it's just the goals.
The goals.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the one where it was who took the smallest area.
Yeah, like whose footprint was the smallest,
landmass.
Oh, okay.
And then you could you counted up the grid and see basically how many squares are in it. And that was really fun to do. Because to be honest, that was anyone's game. Like everyone was
very tight.
88, 90 something and 100. And it was all really close.
Yes.
I liked that. That was fun.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a winner. Like as you said, Sarah, to me, this game's addictive. The puzzle is just totally different because the deck of cards is quite substantial.
Hmm.
And you're only really playing 24 in a whole game. Mm-hmm. And it just feels snappy, quick, fun, and super crunchy.
Super thinky, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
How do the people in the camps change it, change the game?
So the people in the camps one, what you're trying to do is you actually move them along the trails that you're creating, and you're trying to keep the trails going so that they don't reach the end. Mm. Instead, they set up camp. And you'll score points for the campsites that they set up along the way. And you'll also score bonus points for the unique animals they score along the way. So you start with one trail because you start with one base camp, but then you have to add another one in the third round, another in the second, another in the third. In the fourth round, you're just playing cards. You're not adding another base camp. Mm-hmm. And so you end up trying to manage three routes with people going off on them.
Mm.
And making sure that no one reaches the end and instead they're setting up camps to continue their journey.
That's cool. Sounds stressful.
But you're still trying to complete loops.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just a very different way of playing it. You have to think very differently. So I think it's very clever that they've added it's essentially two different play modes, really.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. So actually this will be... by the time people are listening to this, actually, it should either have just launched or be launching tomorrow on Kickstarter. So it's August 16th, obviously, US time, whatever that is.
Yeah.
But I'd check it out for sure. Base game or the deluxe version, I think people will be happy with either or. I think it's going to be fantastic. I hope it's a really successful campaign.
I think it will be. Yeah. Because it looks amazing. Like, they've done a really good job with the marketing, like you said. And
yeah, they've knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Mm. It's a good game for everybody as well. It's kind of an all-rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Adrian? What's your pick of the week?
I've been playing so many games. Actually, one of the things I'll just quickly, briefly touch on is that Jules played two Lacerda games this weekend, right? Like, with Def last week.
Oh, yeah. I played... I played Lisboa with Def. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he played Escape Plan.
Yes.
And Jules said to me today, he said Escape Plan is his favorite one so far.
Yeah, it is. Of the Lacerda's, Escape Plan's my favorite.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He loved it.
That makes sense to me.
That was great. Moving the cops around and messing with everybody, and that was great. That's definitely his wheelhouse. But
it's fun.
That was a great game. And I got my best score ever today on it, which I was really surprised at, because we were like adding it up and we weren't sure where it was going to go, to be honest. Me and MJ were both convinced that Jules maybe had it, but I did get it at the end. But it was just great. It's such a good game, and I think it plays really well with three.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was I thought you had it, and you did.
Yeah.
But there still wasn't any certainty about it.
No.
And, it's just such a clever mix of mechanics. At one point, I was a little bit overwhelmed with the choices, but as I had like two goes, I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually pretty straightforward, but it's just a massive efficiency puzzle and trying to slip past the cops and manage your cash flow. And it's just good.
He got one of the black keys for the locker, or maybe used the ability.
I got a black key.
Yeah, he got a black key, and then he picked he was able to pick up three, and he looked.
No, I've only picked up two lockers.
Yeah, he's got two.
And both of them were the 100 lockers.
Yeah, so $100,000. So he instantly knew, I got to go back there.
Yeah.
Straight away. So he made it his mission to grab another black key.
So I ended up with $270,000 on my lockers.
Yeah, that was crazy. But yeah, it was good. It was a great game. It was always fun to play. But yeah, Jules introduced me to a game this weekend that I was never really interested in playing, if I was honest. And it sat here a while because it's part of the Board Game Barbecue library. And I kind of neglected to play it or ever even try it.
Right.
Kind of not really that interested in it at all. But I really liked the theme because I love Egyptian stuff. And that was Ankh. And man, it's the best game I played this weekend. My head.
Oh, wow, really?
Really good. And I think that was a massive part. It's like one of those things where the group makes a game. Like, we talk about that quite a lot. It was just the right setting, the right group. Like, it was just, Matt had played it before once, so he kind of knew a little bit about it. But the other three of us, me, Ben, and MJ, hadn't played it. But everyone was kind of competitive, and we were doing quite well up until near the end. And then Jules just smashed it. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, he did really well at the end. But, like, it was just really cool. Like, it was just, I couldn't pinpoint something in it that I was like, this is the thing that made me like it. I liked all of it. Like, I liked upgrading myself, like getting the Ankh abilities. And, like, we were saying it's Ankh in time. Like, that was our thing. Like, it's not Morphin time. It's Ankh in time. And, like, got to upgrade and get you cool things. And, yeah, I managed to play like my drought card early at the right time.
Yes.
And I managed to get like five.
You had a massive power play in like the first conflict event.
Yeah.
What happens with the drought? You just make everyone, no one has anything to eat and stuff. And so
So drought is you get a +1 to your combat strength.
Right.
And then for every figure you have in desert hexes, you get a bonus devotion point for it. And so he had like five guys in that region, so he easily was going to win the battle, and because the player he was playing against was playing as Osiris, who wants to lose battles to put out underworld tokens to spawn more dudes. But he just capitalized on that, playing, okay, I'll get this, and just got like 7 victory points off one battle.
I was well ahead at the start.
I panicked after that. I'm like, oh my goodness, he's really got this.
I had no idea what I was doing after that, though. I knew that was right.
Beginner's luck.
Pretty much. But like, man, like, it was just great. Like, I just, the production value, this is just the base game, no Kickstarter stuff. But just the minis in it were great. They're really clear, you know, like even just a who's who and on the board, like with those different kind of pastel-y kind of colors was really clear, concise. Like there was never a point where I didn't know what it was doing. It sounds really harsh. Not that it's basic, but it's like, it's very easy to understand to play it. Obviously the strategy comes in multiple plays and knowing the game, but like to play the game was not remotely difficult at all. Like, I could say most people could probably play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a Nunakai vibes at all?
No, not really. Not as much. I feel that that's more Euro-y. Like, you could feel that more Euro-y vibe in that.
But there's like card odd powers and stuff.
Like that. Yeah. And the actions are like, you know, there's four actions to take, and
you got movement.
Yeah, movement
and summon, and then gain followers and Ankh power.
Yeah,
that's it.
And basically, you know, if you take movement, that's at the top, and you can take an action that's below that. Yeah. And if you took, for example, the third one down, that means all that's left is Ankh in time. Like,
Ankh in time. Yeah.
But like, it was just really cool, and like the it was Ben and Matt were actually sitting next to each other, and when I don't know what the name.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what did you think of the merch?
I thought that was the best bit of the game.
Because that's the most controversial part of the game for a lot of people.
That's probably why I loved it. Because I can see people that are like really into their wargaming and that kind of thing, and area control games and that, and being told, oh, now you've got a buddy with this guy and he's way last. No clue.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and that being like, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to play it myself. Like, I know what I'm doing. I've got my thing and I know what I want to do. So I don't want to mess with someone else's stuff. Like, I'm happy with the toy that I have. Like, but the guys loved it. They even did like the little Saiyan fusion dance and like put their fingers together and like they combined all their stuff. And man, they came back from last to come second.
Yes.
Like, and they had some acceleration. It's really cool because
they had good table talk discussion strategy together.
It really goes to show that.
So this is when two people are like losing, they can team up. Oh, that's cool. Yes. I like that.
So what happens is at the end of the third conflict event, the the two players with the lowest scores have to merge into one entity.
Yeah.
Their powers combine, but the person who was the absolute lowest, their stuff is wiped off the board. They're forgotten in existence by the people of Egypt and merged together into one entity and then continue the game as one team.
But the clever thing was, because they were sitting next to each other, they only get one action each, right? So originally in the game, you get two actions, like we spoke about. But because they sat next to each other, they had their two actions, their single actions each back to back.
Yeah.
So they were able to like tally off each other. So one could do the movement, then one could immediately do stuff that would work for them.
Yeah, so they can do combos that we couldn't because they're separate actions.
Yeah, so they could do like Unk power and then like double down and get those two, where we can't do that. We would have to move and then do Unk power and that was it. But like, it just goes to show like two brains are better than one. Like they like their table talk and like they both stood up and Helen would look around and, you know, Ben would be like, I think we should do this. And Matt's like, oh, but if we go here and do that, and then like they were really into it and it worked phenomenally. It was like a master thing to watch. I was loving it. It was fantastic. But like, I can see why some people wouldn't enjoy that aspect. I get it, but if you've got the right group and they're game for it, it was good. And Jules, you did say, like you said, we're playing with the thing, the merger. That's how we're
I mean, that's how the rules are written, but there are definitely people that just play without it. And it doesn't really break the game. They just skip that part and just keep going.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Well, because like those guys were behind enough that I feel that like singly, they wouldn't catch up. Like,
exactly.
Not that I know enough about the game to definitely put a firm grasp on that and say yes, they never would have won. Like, but you could see that once they combined and they started to do stuff, the acceleration of their victory points were just starting to just get out of control. And that was really cool to see, because I was like, wow, they might do this. Like, they might win it. It was really cool. But yeah, it was a great game. It's obviously like it's an area control game set in Egypt. It's one of the trilogy from Eric Lang. It's, you know, you've got Blood Rage, Rising Sun, and Ankh. And I've played Blood Rage and I've played Ankh. I haven't played Rising Sun yet, but I really enjoyed Ankh. I think it's better than Blood Rage. I liked it a lot. I think that Blood Rage, my biggest problem is that the drafting of the cards and stuff, I don't have enough knowledge of the game to do well.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, you don't rely on that as much.
No.
So I feel that I have a more combative edge, like I feel like I'm competitive, whereas everyone else who knows the cards and they know all the stuff, they just storm those games really well. It was great. Like, I was really amazingly impressed with it, to be honest. And even MJ, I spoke to her, I said, oh, you gotta play, come on, we need five. She's like, you don't need five. I was like, we do, come on, play. It's like, nah, I don't want to play, like, I'm not interested in playing. I was like, oh, come on, man, it would be really cool with five. She's like, go on, let's just do it. And at the end of the game, she was like, that was really good.
She's like, I'm so really happy about this.
It's like, I really enjoyed that. Like, she's like, I think I liked it because it was five of us playing and everyone was into it.
Yes.
Yeah. So she liked the game itself. It wasn't just the thing. It was the
sounds like the fun experience that you had.
Yeah, it was the mechanics and the mix of the group. Like, it just really worked well. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thought it was fantastic. And yeah, I definitely implore people to go out and try it. Like, if you know someone that's got a copy and you've never had a chance to play it, be like, oh, I'd like to try that one day. Just definitely try it, because it was really good. And I would say, if you're cool with like the merger thing, definitely play it, because that really changed the game and made it really interesting.
So I'll say that I think at some point we'll have to organize a game with the full stretch goals and deluxe, because all the pyramids are minis and the temples, and it looks so impressive with all
Jules,
the minis.
You're such
table.
A more is more person. You're like,
oh, yes.
More is more. Just, we got to add more.
Well, yeah. And another thing as well that was kind of cool is that because Matt had a scorpion creature as one of his.
Yes, one of the guardians.
Like a guardian. He had a guardian. So he had that. But when Ben and him merged, Ben then acquired that as their like a whole team, and they were able to selectively demolish mine and Jules's buildings, which meant our gods didn't have as much power anymore.
Yes.
And that was like, that was devastating for
me. I was getting a bit nervous at that point.
Yeah, because I was like, I was really relying on my god having three strength so I'd win these fights, but because they demolished like a temple of mine, it went down back to one, and I was like, oh dear. I can no longer win this fight of what's going to happen. So I knew I was screwed. So I had to change my strategy and my tactics and stuff like on the fly. But that was really fun.
Well, one of the things that I don't think gets often talked about in Ankh, and the reason for that is, you know, if you're the book that comes with for the setup, the game doesn't have a this is how you set up the game. It's a whole scenario book. So the very first ones at the start of the book are considered the basic ones, but then there are other scenarios that add just a few little twists in the rules that really change up the game. So I think one of them is like the old kingdom, where there are no pyramids on the board to start because they hadn't been built yet.
Right.
And so it's just temples and obelisks. And there's even a five-player scenario where the merger event happens. There's two mergers. Oh, it's the bottom four people of five that combine
into, to chase the leader.
To chase the leader, wow, yeah. So you have two mergers in that event. And there's so much to explore in terms of the content of all those scenarios. I have not scratched the surface of that, but it's something I'm excited to dive into more.
Yeah, one thing I would like to say as well, yeah. I don't know like the game fantastically, obviously, after the first play. But I could see a slight frustration with the merger when, let's say, someone has just been battered and they're on 3 VP or 3 devotion, and the other person is on 16 and they're just not quite over that line to kind of get in, and they have to merge, and then they get dropped back.
Yes, that is the one weakness of the game. If you have one player that's just not understanding it and doing very poorly, it will drag the second last player all the way down. You know, I guess it's one of those things. It depends on the group.
Yeah.
I'm seeing this like big, red flag for me here, but I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't play that many war games, but I feel like it's part of the fun of playing a war game to do all that tabletop talk and negotiation and backstabbing and all that yourselves, and like make that dynamic happen yourselves rather than the game asking you to do that. Am I wrong?
I think the game is very cleverly designed in that once you understand it, you can see how it's designed to incentivize people to spread out and be involved in as much conflict as possible. This is a game, if you decide to turtle, you will not win. I can guarantee that.
I can tell you, you don't win. Totally. First-hand experience.
It's you need to get messy in each other's business in this game. Otherwise, you don't stand a chance. And it's so clever that how that's designed. I don't think the game relies on the group at all. I think the game does a very good job. Yeah,
like I said, anyone can play this, I think. It's not as hard. I don't even think it's as hard as Blood Rage, because, like I said, the cards and the drafting, you have to understand all these different cards. And I could just pass you cards the whole game that you're just like, sweet, thank you, because I don't know enough about the game. Whereas this is four actions. It's move, summon more fighters,
get summon money.
More money, and Ankh power, Ankh in time, get your power up, you know, which gives you a benefit of whatever you like. But yeah, I found that it was very fluid. The turns were so snappy. It was like
very snappy,
like especially at the start when it's like everyone's spreading out and getting themselves kind of in position. Your god can't die, so you can never be out of the game. So you can't just get wasted by somebody and be like, right, well, I'm done. I'm out. Like, I'm dead.
I think you'd like it, Sarah. I really do.
I'm not saying the game sounds bad. I guess what I'm really saying is, does the table talk stop, or does it? Is there not as much of that because the game is actually providing some? Does that make sense? Or was there a lot of table talk still? Was there still a lot of?
No, there was plenty of table talk. It was fun.
Yeah, okay. Maybe it's just more of a free-for-all. Like, I'm thinking of games like Eclipse, Jules, where you might say, oh, no, you know, let's be allies. I'm not going to attack you for now. Blah, blah, blah.
No,
that didn't happen. Nah, that didn't happen.
There's none of that. It's like everyone, no friends. Nah. There's no friends here.
No friends.
You definitely couldn't, because like I said, Jules right. You need to be involved in every kind of mini fight and little battle and stuff, because it gives you a bit of an edge and helps you try and get dominance in regions that you necessarily won't. And this is the thing that this is another thing that really blew me away. And I don't understand the nuances of it at all, but when you take dominance in a region at that phase, mm-hmm. when you swap those tokens around and stuff, which is basically the game is split up into eight regions, right? Oh, six regions, sorry, I believe.
Well, there's regions equal to the number of players that it's set up.
Plus right. one or
no, just equal number of players.
So it's five regions at the start of the game, and each region gets a random marker assigned to it depending on what the rule book says. So it's, you know, one to five, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you have these things, these events that happen throughout the game where you add camels, which basically splits the land up into then six, seven, eight,
yeah.
however many that it ends up being. But not only that, you can then move throughout the game, you move those numbers of those regions or those zones around the game. So you might be in a fight coming up and you're like, I don't want to fight this particular area at the start because I don't have many cards left. I need to redraw my cards. So what I'll do is I'm going to swap that. That's now going to be the last battle that's going to happen. And in the first battle I have, which I've only got one warrior in that I know I can't win, I'm going to play this card that refreshes my hand, gets all my cards back, so that later in the game, when the battle phase is going on, I then fight at my strongest in an area that I need to win or I want to dominate
yeah.
in. And that was really interesting because those numbers were moving around the map and it was really hard to kind of keep a track because there was a few times where I was like, sweet, this is going to be the second battle, so I don't have to worry about that. I know what's happening. And then all of a sudden, you know, things would get swapped around and then that would be the sixth. And I'm like, oh no, I didn't want that to be the sixth one. I needed that to be the second fight that I had to refresh cards for the fifth fight. But it sounds laborious, but it's really not. It's fast.
It's
like
fast,
it just goes
yeah.
boom, 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 play a card. Everyone puts a card down, flip it. Okay, you know, no play card got played. So this person wins and you move on. It was really good.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I still think there'd definitely be some like chasing the leader or trying to attack the leader, right? Or something like that, isn't there?
There can be a little bit of that, but honestly, just the way that
isn't that all war games though?
That's yeah, what I'm saying. No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Yeah, I'm just saying, is it cool to have like the players dictating that more than the game itself? But it sounds
absolutely.
From what you're saying, Adrian, is it sounds like there's kind of an agenda everyone's got anyway that they're more interested in pursuing, like with the whole regions thing anyway. So maybe the focus is
that. Because you want it to suit yourself. Mm. Like you want it to suit you. So you would make it
It's definitely a quirky war game.
Yeah.
Mm, it's very different. And it's often it's hard to explain it. And like I can't compare it to any other area control war game. It's just so unique and it's so clever. I just you just gotta try it.
Yeah.
Very cool. Is there any other games you guys want to talk about that you've played that you want to mention this weekend since you played so many?
Let's see. I will mention, I guess I played Lisboa with Def and I really enjoyed that. I'd seen pictures of the board set up many times and I think it looks gorgeous, but it is something else on the table. It is just amazing. Just the level of detail that Ian O'Toole's put into the artwork and just how clever a puzzle of a game that is. So many moving systems that intertwine.
Yeah.
There definitely isn't as much of that in Escape Plan, but I love the theme of Escape Plan. That's what really did it for me. I still loved Lisboa. It was really good, but I just don't know how Vital does it. It's just mental.
Yeah, Lisboa is a particular. I think that for me was, I think, the one I found out of all of his games, the one I found the hardest. I really struggled to get my head around that. And I was like trying to plan, trying to figure out what I was doing. Yeah. And I ended up, I didn't do so well. I think I ended up spending like my points to get influence so I could actually do something. And I thought, I'm pretty sure this is like the worst case scenario right here. You're not meant to do this.
Yeah.
But I really want to try it again.
The other one I'll mention we played was High Society, which has been mentioned so many times on the podcast.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
It's
so good, Sarah. I cannot thank you enough for introducing me to it.
No worries.
Well, we played it.
Five player.
Yeah,
five player. And I was teaching it. No one else had ever played it before.
Right.
I love teaching high society. I teach all the rules and how we bid for the point cards. We're bidding not to take the bad ones. And
Ben was hilarious.
And leaving that rule at the end of, oh, by the way, we add up our money at the end in our hand and whoever has the least cannot win no matter how many points they have.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, what?
Ben had like an evil laugh every time Jules mentioned a rule that screwed the game
over. Yeah.
He's like, if you win this, you get half points. And he's like, evil laugh. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, by the way, if you win and you haven't spent the most money, you cannot be, you can't win.
Yeah.
And he's like, evil laughing. It's really good. It was so fun. I was having a blast playing. Oh, it's so great.
It's so
great. And I actually won, but I couldn't win because I spent too much.
Correct.
Oh, no.
And I ended up winning.
Jules won. And he had, did you have a half point card? And
I did. I had the half your score and I think it was just card. A five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you won with two and a half. Points.
Ooh, yeah.
So funny.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I'm pretty sure Matt said, I'm going to buy this right now.
Yeah. I think he did. Like, he loved it.
It is so mean and it's so great. I love it too.
Mm,
and just the fact that it can end in such a weird way because it just ends so when chaotic. That fourth green card shows up. And so you might have a game where there's no points at all in the game.
I had a 10. I won a 10. At the night, and I was like, please, I just need that other green one. I need that green one to come out. Come on, that green one has to come out. And it just didn't. And I just kept pulling more cards out. I was like, no.
Because you only have so little. Like, you don't have much to use. You've only got, 10 cards or something? You've got hardly any cards. And then you can't, you know, that whole thing of, you know, you put 8 money on the table and you can't bring it back and then put your 10 down. You got to. If you put 3 cards out there, they're on the table. That's it. You don't get them back. You can't do swapsies.
I bled my money out as well with the one that deletes the card. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to.
Because you had the 10 by then, right? And then you didn't want to delete the 10 because you've spent so much on that 10.
I got nothing. So then I just spent willy-nilly and they took that money away from me and I was like, oh, no.
That's the most evil part. Like, people make you spend so much on a point card and then they know that you've got nothing and you can't you can't bid for the get rid of a card.
I did the classic of I forgot that rule of you have to spend that money. And I looked at my money and I remembered. I was like, oh, dear.
How much money did you have left, Adrian?
I had like 8.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm out.
No, you've
got to
keep
I'm
the
out.
25,000. Oh, yeah. Funny.
It was good.
It's so fast. Good. So. I love High Society.
Oh, yeah. So good.
It's such a great game day game. It's such a great end of the day, like, you know, nighttime game as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Connor.
Yo.
Have you bought anything from Advent Games lately?
Oh, have I bought anything from Advent Games? I just went and filled my cart up with a slew of games from Advent.
It's easy to do because they've got a fantastic range of games, they've got great prices, and they've got flat rate shipping, be it in the cities or regional.
And the website is just super easy to navigate. They've always got an up-to-date catalogue, including games that have just dropped.
Yeah, and they've got all of the categories split out. So for me, I can just go, bam, solo games. That's my list. I don't need to look at anything else. And I don't have to worry about how long it's going to be to get there because Dean is always on it. It ships pretty quickly. And within a few days, it's usually bang on my doorstep.
And speaking of being places, Dean is an avid supporter of our Sydney Game Days. So we thank Dean and the Advent crew for doing that.
He is a dead set legend. And I'm sure... if you get along to the next Sydney Game Day, which isn't planned yet, but will be soon, you could hear Dean do a rendition of... he probably can't do Informer as good as me, but he'll do something, I'm sure.
And he's also a member of the deep-voiced brotherhood like you and me, Mitch, so...
He is. Although, if we were ranking, he'd probably be...
Oh, yeah. Golden tonsils.
Check it out. adventgames.com.au for all of your board gaming supplies and send Dean a little message because I'm sure he loves them.
All right, so let's move on to our question of the pod and do a recap from last week's question, which was, are you more likely to love a game if you won it the first time.
Yes.
Does it color your opinion of the game? And of course, we had a lot of people saying, no, I don't mind if I lose or win. You know, of course we had that. No one admitted.
That's me. I say
no
that.
No one admitted that.
I'll tell you right now, I don't care.
No, it's good. It's good to hear that, like, a lot of people look for other things in games.
Yeah.
I already answered. Well, I already said my thing, so tell us.
Yeah, I said it does influence me. I guess not in the sense of, yeah, I won, like, I like this game. It would be more because I guess it depends on the game. Assuming it's not a luck-driven game.
Yeah.
If I win the game, I feel like it's because I've understood it.
Yeah.
And I've come up with a good strategy. And it just means my mind has clicked with the puzzle of the game.
Yeah.
And if I feel like I've had that click, then I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And
that can be a good feeling, right? Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even if I come second, like, it's like, oh, I almost got there. That was, like, that was really good. But I say, yes, it does influence me as to how much. I don't really know, but there are plenty of games I've played and lost and then gone and bought it straight away because I loved it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's definitely not everything, but I think it does have a little bit of, you know, spice and pizzazz it influences you in a little way.
I'm willing to say it might influence you a small amount, because if it was only if I win it, am I going to buy it kind of thing, I wouldn't have bought any games. I don't win very often. I especially don't win on my first game. But I really am, like, an advocate of, like, the right group. Like, I really find that a group thing will make me, like, Ankh is a game that I would buy. Ooh. After that experience, like, no joke, I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's a game that I wouldn't have expected to enjoy, but the group made that situation happen. So I feel like it's almost like chasing the dragon. I'm like, I want to play again with a group, like, it has to be like it was before.
Yes,
but you might influence me in a different way, because I might play it, then it might not be the same. I might be like, this isn't the same as the first time.
Like, Jules, come back to Brisbane and we all have to play. It has to be the same group.
Same group,
we
same
have to
date,
have the same dinner
next year,
like, same time, same position of the stars.
I'm sitting in this seat, you sit in that seat. You had a Coke and rum, like, that's yours. Like, you have that. Oh, you know, like, But yeah, it was good. It's I think it might influence me a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And I think, like, there's a lot going on when you like a game. Like you said, there's a lot of factors. There's some that are, like, subconscious. Mm. I mean, we all know, because we talk about and we analyze. And we talk about why we like certain games on the podcast. And sometimes it's hard to do that. Sometimes it's more hard than others. It's like, I can't tell you exactly why I love this game so much. I'm going to try. But there's all these other factors as well. So,
well, I loved On Mars. And then I made it an oath to play it 10 times back to back to understand it.
Oh, that's right.
And I lost 8 games in a row.
Your soul was crushed.
I was like, I can't keep doing this. But I loved every game that we played of that. I really did. Yeah. And it's like like I said before, MD doesn't care because she wins most of the games, so she's not. There's no excitement in winning. But when I win, it's like I'm just so ecstatic because it's like, this is great because I haven't won before, so it's a great experience for me. It's not like I'm bored of winning. Like, it's exciting. So.
Yeah, with some games it's just like Terra Mystica, for example. I very rarely win a game of Terra Mystica, but that makes the challenge all the better, and I just want to do well. Like, I can do this better. I know I can do this better, and then I just want to play.
You're just chasing the victory.
Yeah, that's right. I'll never get there, but it's fine. So we did have some folks respond in our Discord. Chris said that he doesn't care about winning that much, and if he has a lot of fun playing and the decisions, it's all about the decisions, like if he feels like he's got some interesting things to think about, or lots of laughs. Laughing's good.
Yeah.
Laughing's fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fausel said when the win doesn't feel deserved, then it doesn't feel good. But when it feels like feels like you did a good job and like you played really well, and yeah, that makes sense. And Lauren says in competitive games, she's not fussed about winning or losing first off. But in cooperative games, if you win the first go, then that's going to shape the opinion of the game, which we spoke about, I think, didn't we, on the podcast? It's like you don't want that to be too easy. I don't know. Did you guys have a look at Facebook responses?
Yeah, it was the general consensus of people was they enjoy the experience of playing the game.
Yeah.
Winning and losing didn't really affect their stance on the game itself. They were more the experience of being at the table with others and, you know, and laughing and things like that. So it was very kind of a very much the same kind of thing. Just, like no one was admitting I have to win. There was a lot of people winding other people up and partners getting wound up by others. Like, you don't need that. Like, you get an assault if you lose kind of attitude.
There was a few people like throwing themselves a pity party, I noticed too. They were like, oh, I never win. So yeah, like similar to what you said, Adrian, I wouldn't buy any game.
That's me.
Yeah, yeah, it was you.
That's true.
But there were plenty of others as well.
I think it's really interesting psychology in playing games with other people. I mean, these games are a lot of, aside from, I guess, co-op, in a competitive game, it's designed to be tension. There's designed to be competition and banter and back and forth amongst the players to determine a winner. Mm. Like, it's, you know, I don't think anyone will deny you get a little bit of a dopamine rush if you win a game, especially when it's tight.
Yeah,
like,
that's intense.
And it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. This should be just me, but it's like I'm definitely trying to win a game when I play it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm not going, oh, I'm going to just, I'll come third or whatever. Like, no, I'm like, I'm going to aim for a win.
Yeah,
of course.
But am I going to like, yeah,
it's not fair to other people if you don't try. Then when they win, you'll be like, oh, I wasn't trying.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I want everyone invested, everyone to do their best and have a fun time. And it's just, that's what makes that's what makes games fun to me.
Yeah, I agree totally. And I think that you're right. And I think there's definitely a buzz that you get, and it's hard to ignore that. And I think the only real way that doesn't work out for me is if I don't feel like I have gained anything left to gain from playing that game again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sometimes you might win a game and you feel like you've seen all there is to see in that game and then not really want to play it. I can think of a couple, but I'm not going to name them. But,
sure.
But, yeah, I think that sort of happens, and then that's a different feeling because then you actually don't really get that buzz. You just kind of go, oh yeah, that was a game.
Yeah,
you know, it was all right.
Yeah, like the example I'm thinking of is Illusion that you talked about earlier. Mm. Like when you call it and you think you've got it and you find out you're right, there's that buzz, like, yes, I got a mini win there.
Yeah.
Like, it's or when you play Skull and you're like, yes, I didn't get any skulls. Yeah. Like, it's just,
yeah, because it's that like release of tension, right? Especially with both of those games, there's that release of tension. You just want that tension to be off your shoulders because you're like, oh god, you know, I just want to get through. I want to be right. Especially Skull.
Skull's terrible for that.
Yeah,
bloody nightmare.
Absolutely. All right, so this time, this week, we have a new question, and that question is there a game that you expected to hate that was so good that you immediately bought it?
That's a good one.
It's very specific. Or at least, like, a game that you expected to hate that was really good.
I could put myself down for Ankh, like, on this weekend. It was a game that I did not – I was not interested in playing it, but I was like, this is just going to be, like, an area control thing. Jules is going to smash everybody.
That did happen.
But, like, I wasn't, like, just like, oh, you know, not that sure about it. And I don't really know the rules, and I haven't played Rising Sun yet, but you know, we'll give it a go because it plays to five and everyone else is kind of semi keen on playing it, and we'll give it a run. And then I was like, I can't believe how much I'm loving this. Like, I did well at the start, and then Jules was doing really well. And to be honest, like, you didn't run away with it until the last.
Yeah, it was the very end. Yeah.
Like, so it was really tight.
It was a competitive game.
It was a very competitive game, and it was just great. Like I was blown away by it. Like, and I would immediately play this game again, hands down, play it again. And it was a game that I went into just, it's not my thing. It just isn't. Like, I don't have any of these games in my collection, but it's a game that I would.
As a quick note on it again, a lot of people say their absolute favorite player count is two player for Ankh.
Oh, wow.
It's very chess-like.
I might give it a go of NJ for sure, because she just enjoyed it as much as I did. So we were talking about it afterwards, like in the evening when we were, you know, on our own, we were talking about the game and what we liked about it. And it was just great. Like, just, blew me away. So that's definitely one for the list. And I'm sure there's others that are in my collection somewhere that I've, Letters for Whitechapel. That's one.
Really? You didn't think you'd like it?
I have that game. Oh, no. I was just like, admin, writing down numbers. I don't care. So I don't even like bingo. Like, you know, I don't need numbers. Like, and then I played it and, man, I got like sweat on the back of my neck. I was stressing out. And I loved it. I thought it was a phenomenal game. And we've only played it with two, but I can see the appeal of playing it with a group on a night, you know, like with four or five people and everyone trying to figure out where you are and where you're hiding and all that kind of stuff. And that was a game that I definitely was not interested in playing. And that was even one when MJ had played it with you guys, loved it and bought it. And I was like, oh, I don't want to play that.
You were like just doing that for love. You're like, ah, oh, if you want to play.
And then she was like, oh, you know, like, well, we both had got a game like that week, and she was like, oh, we'll play yours and then we'll play mine, or vice versa. And I was like, cool, no worries. We'll play mine first, of course. I'm selfish. And we'll delay yours for 2 months and then hopefully you'll not ask me.
Forget
about it. No, not really. We actually played it that weekend. And you know what? Like, it was really, like, intense. Like, it's an intense game, especially one-on-one.
Oh, yeah.
That's
really were you playing as Jack the Ripper, and this is where you thought you were the good guy?
Yeah, the hero.
I'm the hero. Whoops, I
mean, keeping the streets clean.
That's murderer. Yeah. Terrible. It was, I loved that game. I really, really enjoyed that game. I thought it was great. Really clever how it worked, how it was all, it was really thematic and how it felt, and
So great stressful, game. Though. So,
no, that's definitely, very stressful. But that's part of the fun of that game, unfortunately. The stress is the fun bit.
Yeah.
So if you don't like stress, you're probably not going to like it very much. But if you don't mind a bit of stress and a bit of sweat on the back of your neck, then you'll be fine. Like, but it was good. That's another one. That's just two that I can think of right now that I was going into, like, not happy about, but came out just blown away. So,
I've actually
But there are two games that – So they're two games that don't have anything like that in my collection, though.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything that's secret, hidden, like movement, and I don't have anything that's like area control-y kind of war game. So maybe that's kind of part of the appeal. It's like, this is a piece of the puzzle that I'm missing from my collection that other people enjoy, and I actually now enjoy, that I would like to enjoy with people in the future. So that's why I want to get this one, you know? But that's another question, I suppose. But
I got a couple. One I think probably surprised you guys, maybe. Eclipse is like going back.
Oh, really?
Going back like 10 years ago or whatever, whenever it came out. I wasn't really convinced, and it was my ex that wanted to play this game. And I was like, oh, it's gonna be too much conflict, da 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 da, because back then I wasn't a fan of conflict. I think I've spoken about this before on the pod, that I played a lot of games that were like kind of multiplayer solitaire. I really liked those kind of games where there was only really blocking on the board, like Agricola. Like, I was into that sort of thing, right? Yeah, now I've become
combative and hostile.
yeah. As I'm getting older, so, you know, becoming more abrasive. I tried it. And like, straight up, it's like the first turn doing an action, putting an action disc on there. I was like, oh, no, this is cool. I like this. This is really cool. And
I think with Eclipse, just setting it up, you get excited, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so many bits.
It's pretty exciting. So
it looks good on the table.
Yeah, and then the like, research, the text, and the,
I love the tech tray. Just, it's cool.
Well, let's not forget it was the original version. It wasn't quite as nice to look at. But,
That's right.
But So that totally changed. I mean, that changed my whole opinion on what I liked in games, really. Wow. That was like the turning point of, oh, actually, you know, interaction with other people that are at the table with you is kind of cool, actually.
I agree with that, Sarah, completely. Like, I'm just thinking that now. I'm like, this is like changed my opinion. It's kind of that don't judge a book by its cover kind of mentality. It's like, this is something people have told me I might like. I've gone, now I won't like it, but I do like it.
Mm.
I don't understand why, but I do. It's just,
who knew we all like a bit of Biffo?
Biffo.
Yeah, maybe that's it too. Maybe like it's that, you know, when you first start out gaming, that can be a little intense, you know?
Yeah,
and
of
then
course.
When you're more confident or whatever, then it's like, oh, that's not so bad. And, you know, if I do get utterly destroyed, it's fine. I'll just go put the kettle on and I'll be the tea person. That's fine. You know, like, you don't care as much. It's not as embarrassing.
Yeah,
whereas when you're new to gaming in general, like just completely new to gaming,
absolutely,
getting crushed like that feels a little bit worse somehow.
Yeah, I agree.
A little bit more scary. Yeah, and there was another one, I think. I didn't rush out to buy it. Oh, I was talking to you guys about it before, and now I've forgotten what it was.
Because I said, don't talk about it now. We'll talk about it on the pod.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't let me talk about it. No.
I'll jump in with one from me.
Yeah.
So mine is Oriflamme. And that might be a surprise to some people
because
I talked
to me
about
because it sounded like it was backstabby, and you like backstabbing, so
yeah. So I didn't expect to hate it. It was just one of those things. The situation where it was presented to me, I was at one of our greatest supporters, Draven, at his place, and the game was brought out towards the end of the game night. Just like, hey, we've got a quick game we can play before we finish up, and I just looked at the box. And it didn't really jump out. It looked very unassuming. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, let's play this game. Like, first round, I'm like, I love this. I just immediately went and bought it, bought the second version when it came out, and I will immediately buy the third one when it comes soon. It's just an amazing game. But I looked at it and like, okay, it's a card game, like, whatever. The art is okay. It's pretty good. But man, just it's so backstabby and cutthroat, and has this moment of tension when you push your luck with the tokens on your characters. Oh,
have you played Adrian?
I haven't. No.
Oh my goodness!
It's actually reminding me of another game that's that I didn't buy because I couldn't get it at the time because it wasn't in print. But it was a game that everyone was playing at the retreat. And they're all going to sit down and play it. And I was tired. And I was like, nah, it's not my kind of game. And it was like, oh, if you play it as the last player, we can play up to six. And it was Condon Cherry.
Oh, yes.
That game had some key experience moments in. And it just blew me out of the water. And I looked online and I was at the table like a madman trying to buy it. And I couldn't find it
because
it was out.
It's around now.
Yeah, I think it's.
Yeah, because I tried to get it for years. It was out of print. It's back now. Yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely will look that up now thinking about it. But that was another one where I was like, nah, area control, like cards that have different powers where you basically screw each other over. I was like,
It's amazing. I played it in the US. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Connor just sitting back quiet for once, which never happened. So we should have known something was up.
Yeah, we should have.
He at the end of the game, me and Jules, I think, were fighting each other. And we knocked each other out, and then Connor just played all his cards
and won.
Took the game. It was great. But games that just they come from nowhere and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I can't explain it, but they're just great. So yeah, plenty of games that I've hated on and then ended up loving. So.
I remembered what mine was. It was Unfair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't immediately buy it because there was a person at my game group that had it. So they brought it to the game days that I used to go to on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know why. I think it was because of the title, actually. Maybe it was because of the title. And again, this is going back a while. And I was like, oh, this is going to be Take That and blah, blah, blah. And in fact, the Take That in it is so minor and it's
mild.
It's very mild. And it's, you know, you usually just like the cards that have take that on them, they also have a different side that give you a bonus, and it's usually better to just take the bonus and not do the bad thing to other people.
Yeah.
So it's so mild. And so it was like not at all an issue. It wasn't a silly take that game at all. I thought it was really cool. I liked all the cards and this like crazy wacky rides that you can build. And yeah, I thought it was really fun. So yeah. And yeah, the only reason I didn't buy it was because of it was already in the group. And then I ended up buying Funfair anyway, which is like the lighter version. So yeah. That was the other one I was thinking.
Nice.
Well remembered, because I'd completely forgotten.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It was out of here. Yeah. So we'll post that question up as well in our Discord and on our Facebook community, and you guys can tell us what game you expected to hate that you ended up immediately purchasing, or that you at least were blown away by.
Mm-hmm.
All right. While we're talking about the community, I want to say a big thank you to everybody in the community. I want to thank our Patreons as well. You guys are the best. You're the reason why we're doing this, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you all very much. Now it's time to swear an oath. All right. Adrian, did you do your oath? What was it? What did you
Please,
do it?
It's me. Of course I didn't do it. What happened was Jules has come and stayed for the past 2 days, so we played a bunch of other
blame
games
it on Jules.
Weren't my oath, of course. But now we actually originally some people going to come round to play Hues and Cues, and what happened was I actually got sick, so we had to cancel that, and they came round today as a revisit.
Yeah.
Jules was here, those guys. But they having a 10-month-old child, like, it's pretty full on. I didn't realize how full on it was going to be until, like, yeah, he was pretty busy and getting a bit cranky towards the end, bless him. But, yeah, Hues and Cues was just not going to happen with that group. But I intend to try and play it at the game day, which is coming up next week. But I would like to add another one. And since, Sarah, you're coming down, which is going to be – or coming up, sorry, is going to be awesome – I'd like to play Scout. Like, it sounds great. It sounds like I'd love. I love trick-taking games. It's, you know, it'll be a good one at the game day for sure.
Hell yeah.
Maybe in the evening we could, yeah, get the Scout on and give that a go. So, yeah, we'll stick that on the oath list. So,
good idea. I like that.
That's it. That's it. Right. Make it your responsibility. That's my plan.
I love that.
Just keep pushing them.
You're doing something, Sarah.
Yeah, that's it.
That's really fair. Yeah, I love that. What about you?
I should have gone last, shouldn't I? Because you might pull me down now.
Again. Just, I'm going to make
just
it
purposely
huge.
Not bring it, Sarah.
Teach me Pipeline with the expansion. Yeah, sweet. You already taught me Pipeline once. I wouldn't do that to you again. What about you, Jules?
Yeah, so my oath was to play all of the game modes and variations in Trailblazers, which I have done now. Yeah, it's just such a good game. I really love it. So that oath is done. And for a new oath, I'm still on the road a bit, and I don't know when I'm on the podcast next, but because I've been on the road for a little while, I'm pretty sure there's a handful of packages that will probably be waiting for me when I get back home. So I think I'm just going to do a bit of like a lucky dip and just say I'm going to play one of the games that's waiting for me. Now, as to what that could be, that could be Tortuga 1667. It could be Oathsworn. It could be Fall of the Mountain King. And it could be John Company 2nd Edition. Those are the things that are potentially going to be there by the time I get back home, because I've gotten a few email notifications and on the journey across the east coast of Australia, and I've been starting to get more and more excited about going
home. Returning home,
yeah.
Getting more and more excited, just frantically checking your emails.
My foot's just hitting the bottom of the car a little bit harder.
Does it stress you out a little bit? Do you like not like having packages there? You know, like just because you don't want them to get lost, or you don't want to see them, you want to know that they're okay.
Fine.
Maybe that's just me.
I haven't thought about that, Sarah. You're making me stressed now.
You gotta get home now. It's fine. Check your packages.
There's people there to collect them. I'm sure they're fine.
All right, that's
but,
cool.
I guess I'm swearing to play one of the new games that's awaiting for me when I get back home.
You're just going to randomize it too? You're just going to stick your hand in, pull out a package, that's the one? Or
yeah, pretty much.
Okay, that's cool.
What I might do randomized. Is I'll number the boxes and then pull a number out of a hat and that'll be the one.
Mm.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I like that. Okay, so my oath was to play Burn Cycle, like a full game of it, because I didn't quite finish the mission and I didn't do it because listen to my voice. I haven't been 100% this week. I'm trying to get sympathy. Yeah, I was just not feeling up to it. I've been kind of brain dead this week. So I'm going to have to do that, and also I'm going to be teaching Scout, and also I'll be teaching a few other games at the game day. Which will be fun. I think I put myself down to teach Mind Management, Dom Pierre,
ooh,
and Carnegie. So it's gonna be it's gonna be a really good day. Yeah, pretty excited.
Dom Pierre, that was fun when we played it.
Oh, it was so fun. Yeah, I loved it. And it's available retail now at a reasonable price, not for a reasonable price.
Yeah, not $100 shipping.
Yeah, yeah. 59 euros or whatever it was shipping. That was crazy. This is tough. So many things. All right. I have a game of The Crew going and this is really – like I might fail just because we might lose so much. We're trying to finish it up to mission 50. So I want to finish mission 50. I've never got through it. I don't know about you guys. I've never got through the whole thing before.
I've never got through it. No.
Yeah.
We're still playing it now with a group semi-regular. Like when they come around, we play it and that's what we
play. Yeah, I've only played it a handful of times. I don't own a copy though, but
We are super close. Definitely not mission 50. We are super close to finishing it. Like we've only got two missions left and it is getting
Here's a question.
Super intense.
If you finish mission 50, would you go back to mission 1 and play it through again?
I never want to play this game again. Seriously. You don't understand.
I feel like a lot of people have had burnout.
Yeah, yeah. It's those last few missions. You know,
I think
you
that's
play
the problem.
Over
you
over.
Set yourself the goal to have to do it, and then you just keep playing it over and over to do it, and then you do get burnt out because you're like, I have to do it. I have to do it. It's definitely possible. And then it just stresses you out and then you lose the enjoyment factor.
50 plays of a game is a lot to begin with, but you're not winning any all 50 of those.
Exactly.
It might be 200 plays of The Crew or more before you actually win all of them.
But some of them
are over 100, I can tell you that.
Over in like a minute and a half. Like you play it out and you go, we can't win this now. We know we can't win
reset.
This. Reset. It takes longer to reset it than what it does to play the hand.
But that's not to say down the track I wouldn't, and I still think it's an awesome game, and I'm still enjoying it. It's just that, oh my god, those last few missions, and you know what, I'd probably just break it out and go, hey, let's start from mission 12 and just see how far we go or something like that.
Sure.
You know, that's a different thing.
I actually think playing it from mission 1 is a great way to teach the concept of trick taking games.
It can be
you can openly you can kind of open hand it a bit, you know, like you haven't got to go, you know, you're not shy away from it, and you can learn it together. Because I think the concept of trick taking is quite hard to learn sometimes. Like that's me personally, but
either I'm a really bad teacher, or like I've tried that with two different groups, and it's gone horribly badly with The Crew. Mm. And I don't know why. I think they were stressed out; they didn't want to stuff it up or something. And I'm like, it's cool. It doesn't matter. We're all friends here. But it didn't go that well. But it could be my fault. But also,
it could be Math's fault.
What? Whose fault?
It could math.
Math. Yeah, it's math. Yeah, let's play math. The Crew too, though, as well, because the way that works, it's really just like you're playing all these missions, but it's always random stuff. Basically, you get all these random things that you have to do, like Jules has to win the first four tricks, and then Adrian, you can't win. Greens and yellows this time, and I have to win the blue 7 with a pink 9, right? it's all just random stuff. So you can't really get bored of that one.
Yeah.
So I would probably say that that's going to be the version I will want to play. Mm-hmm.
Keep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, all right. Cool. That's it. That's
good luck. Mission
Thank
captain.
You. Yeah. It's going to be embarrassing if I keep failing this. Because it's like, oh, you really suck at the crew. It's like, no, it's really hard. Anyway. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you, Jules. Are you feeling like cramped? Are you guys feeling cramped by now?
No,
it's not too bad. Okay. Like, I'm in my PJs, got a blanket. I'm good.
You guys under like a blanket together.
Yeah.
Some hot cocoa.
We've got a double hoodie on. We're both under the same hoodie. Two heads coming out the top.
Lucky, like, neither of you have that, you know, like a really large personal space circle where you feel really, you know, awkward. Because I think I would probably, depending on who it was, like with you guys would probably be fine. But depending on who it is, I like would tense up. I would probably be really tense and then my whole body would be cramped after being that close to someone. You know, like if I'm on the train and someone sits right next to me that I don't know.
Yeah, you got to sit slightly awkwardly and your back starts to hurt.
My whole body tenses. Like I'm like, oh, this is awkward. I don't want to move. Like I don't want to bug them too. Like a lot of it is that I'm a very apologetic person. I don't want to ruin their day. So I'm like, I don't want to move my elbow and then hit them. I don't know.
No one sits next to me on the bus anyway, so it doesn't matter. I just smile at them and pat the seat before they come and sit down. And
then they That's the sit trick. Next to me. Yeah.
It's the cooties.
I need to do that. That's it. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both for being on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I want to say, of course, a special thanks to our sponsors as well and to our Patreons. And all our community members as well. So thank you all for listening, and I hope your next game is a sizzling one. I tell you what one is.
Yeah.
Cosmic Encounter.
Oh, that's a good one.
I didn't immediately go out and buy it, though. But I definitely thought, I'm not going to like this because negotiation kind of scares me. And then...
Yeah, I hate the word
Me too. I'm shit at it. I'm terrible.
I just don't like relying on other people's stupidity. Because when look, this is a good deal, man. This is a great deal. And then no one wants to deal with it.
And you're just like, what's wrong with you?
You hate Catan.
Yeah, I don't like Catan.
Catan's hilarious. I swap one sheep for a sheep. I'm like, nah.
I can think of the opposite. A game I expected to love but ended up hating.
Oh, save that for next week.